Welcome to the Gridiron Icon Podcast, where we visit with legends of the game.
Touchdown.
Including players and coaches from the NFL, college football, and beyond. And now, fresh off the end of the bench, Stacey Bauman and NFL legend Preston Dennard.
Let's go!
All right, welcome into this week at Gridiron Icon. I am joined by my better half and partner in crime, the iconic Mr. Preston Dennard. How are we, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing well in honor of my friend, his first team he played for. But we really want to focus on the Rams, but I just had to pull
it out. As Greg, we what do.
What did you call this, Greg?
As we do.
Suffalo.
Suffalo.
Listen, the Bills Mafia is coming.
We had great days in Buffalo. You know, let's Buffalo's had its great shares of days and great games. But you know, let's be honest, PD. We were 2-14 a couple years when we were there. We suffered through some heartbreaking days.
Boy, he started that thing out, didn't he?
That's what happens. Listen. Legends wear horns.
We suffered through some hard games back then, man. Some cold weather.
There's only one thing, but I'm going to let Stacey get started. But there's one thing that I'm going to mention that was wonderful in that 2-14 season. We'll get to it.
Okay. All right. So folks that are listening or watching on our YouTube channel, Gridiron Icon, you may recognize this voice. And as you can see with the banter between two ex-teammates, this is going to be a riot. Our guest this week is a former running back from the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, drafted in round one of the 1984 NFL draft by the Buffalo Bills, where he was a Pro Bowler in his rookie season after rushing for over 1,100 yards as a rook. He went on to the much more important and glorious Los Angeles Rams, where he truly shined, leading the league with 16 touchdowns in 1988, winning NFL Comeback Player of the Year, and followed that up by, 15 rushing touchdowns the next year in 1989, one of the only players not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame to ever do that. He briefly joined the LA Raiders in 1990, and folks, I'm going to get this out of the way. In my opinion, one of the most underrated players of his generation in the 80s and 90s, the iconic number 42. That's the number. Greg Bell, running back.
There you go, baby. There you go.
Okay, we got a little sound effect there. Hey, guys, it's great to be here.
Glad to have you, baby. Glad to have you. This is going to be fun, and I look forward to it because I got so many things we want to ask. So let's just get to it. And Stacey, kick us off. I'm gonna let you because you're on tonight. You know.
Yeah. I'll kick this off, and then we'll jump into the stories because I got a feeling you two are going to be on fire here tonight. So take us back to the beginning, Greg. For those fans that have lost track of you or want to catch up on a little history of what you've been doing, but take us back to the beginning. Columbus, Ohio. You started as a kid. Just tell us real briefly how you fell in love with football. Was there other sports and what role your parents played?
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny because most people in Columbus, Ohio didn't even know I played football because I really didn't start playing until I got to high school. And back in those days, it wasn't 9 through 12. It was 10 through 12. So I was an outstanding track guy. I was an outstanding basketball player. I pretty much did those two things all the way as a young kid. But I'm going to tell you, we had a game called Smear the, you know, I won't say what the other side of the name was, but I was one of the best kids. I could go back and forth and nobody could tackle me. But my mother never would sign the release form for me to play football. So I never got a chance to play. And then when she finally gave me the release form, when I think I was in the eighth or ninth grade, they put me on the line because I was bigger than most kids. And I hated being on the line, so I never came to practice. So they would watch me with a basketball walking to the gym to play basketball when I was supposed to be practicing football. And so it was like an outstanding joke that I would show up for the banquet to get my football trophy because I paid for it, right? And they would make jokes about, well, you know, he could have did this, he could have did that, but it shocked everybody when finally in the 10th grade I decided to take football seriously, and they let me play running back for the first time. And believe it or not, that's the only position I've ever played in my life. I started out as a running back, and I've never played any other position other than running back my entire life. And, you know, colleges that recruited me, I'm a kid who grew up under Woody Hayes, mm-hmm. and I grew up mm-hmm. coming behind Archie Griffin. Archie was like a big brother to a lot of guys who grew up in Columbus, Ohio. And so me and Keith, his younger brother, we came up at the same time. We ran track together. We knew each other. I was really an outstanding long jumper. And I kind of did a lot of great things on the track and field side, more so than never did on the football, actually even during high school. I was a track guy who became a football player, but because of my size, it's just, you know, by my junior year in high school, I became about 195, and that's a pretty big high school running back. And, you know, the speed was always there. And like I said, that's the only position I've ever played in my life. A lot of guys have always asked me, a lot of colleges recruited me to be a defensive back because I had a 43-inch vertical coming out of high school.
Whoa.
And I just said, you know, this is the only position I've ever known. If I'm not going to play running back, then I'm not going to go to your college. And, you know, I was fortunate to be, you know, back in those days, they were called blue chip All-Americans. Me and Herschel and Kerwin Bell and Mike Rozier were the top four backs coming out of high school that year. And the four of us, you know, we kind of made a pact that we weren't going to go to the same schools. We wasted time us sharing positions. Herschel went to Georgia. Kerwin went to Kansas. You know, I ended up going to Notre Dame, and then Mike ended up going to Coffeyville first, and then he ended up at Nebraska. But, you know, the funny thing about it, we all became friends, and we all know each other. And it's funny when we see each other today. You know, we remember each other from being, you know, going through some recruiting trips together. That's how it was. But, you know, Coach Hayes was a big influence on my life. I met him when I was a young kid up at Ohio State. And it's kind of funny. I run a camp today that's a simulation of what Ohio State had when I was a kid. It's a free program about sports, but it was a life skill camp. And so it was called NYSP, National Youth Sports Program. And it taught kids about life. And Coach Hayes, I told people, I think he used to use it as an early recruiting trick, you know, because yeah. he could come out and see a bunch of kids, a lot of young inner city kids that didn't have anywhere else to go to, you know, to have a facility like Ohio State. And I do the same thing now. I take them up to Cal State San Bernardino. And, you know, I've seen about 18 kids that I work with over the last 20, 30 years now that have got a chance to play in the National Football League. So it's one of those opportunities where, you know, you give a kid a chance to dream, and you give him the resources, and you can watch him grow. And, you know, I'm just happy that I had that opportunity, and I've been able to take what I've had and you know, keep that cycle, you know, that the circle of life, I guess you can call it, and be able to give back the same way that someone was able to give back to me back in the 70s, you know. Man, Petey, can you believe I actually said that? 1970.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. Just imagine.
That seemed like a long time ago, man.
Oh, it was. It was. Yeah. Well, you know what? Go ahead. Finish.
Petey, I was 22 years old, 23 years old when we first met.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You were just coming in, and I was just about on my way out the door. But I want you to take us back when you first had your first opportunity to be on the football team. Everything's a go. You go out to that first practice, the first time you put your hands on the ball in the backfield. Tell us about that experience, the first carry. You remember that?
Well, I you know, it's hard to remember, but I do remember, you know, it's kind of funny because at that time, as a kid growing up in Columbus, Ohio, the Griffin name was really mm-hmm. a big name in Columbus. You know, there were about seven boys, so you can think mm-hmm. how many kids, and they all play football. And now we're down to the baby, which was Keith. And Keith was an outstanding football player at that time. So he had already been playing football, and And it's funny because he was playing at the what was called the unlimited weight. So you can weigh anything and play at that level. And I had never really ever played. And I can't tell you at the first carry, but I can tell you that first season, I ended up leading the league in rushing. And I actually was voted MVP over Keith, who had been back-to-back MVP. It was one of those kind of things where you say to yourself, did I just do that? You know, everybody's like, man, he never played the game before. He's MVP of the league. You know, like I said, we played that game, smear the, you know what, and I was really good at that game. I'm just telling you. I was good at vertical, making people miss. And I was just really good at that game. And I told my dad, as soon as I had the opportunity to play varsity football, you know, I was fortunate that I played varsity from the first day I came to school. Wow. To, you know, I never had to worry about reserve. I always had the number one line blocking for me, you know, one of those kind of situations. And, man, Petey, I wish I had a number one line when I was.
Oh, no.
Don't tell it.
Those Rams lines.
Because I was running for my life, man.
Oh, you were running.
My guys were good, man. They did their best.
Wait a minute. So you're running for, I mean, we're going to get into the pro career, but I just got to, we got to mark that. You're running for your life behind the Buffalo offensive line as a rookie, and you still ran for 1,100 yards?
Still ran for 11.
Yeah. Man, you know.
Is that fear or what?
It's kind of funny. I tell people kind of funny. That rookie year in Buffalo, it took a blessing and it took a team effort. I think the first, probably the first six games, I probably only hit about 70 yards.
Yeah.
Wow.
Literally. In seven games, I hit about 70 yards. And then the nine other games, boom, there was 1,000-something. But it took, it took one of my favorite players was Tony Dorsett. We spent a lot of time in the summer. Ron Springs, who was like one of my big brothers, he went to Ohio State. We used to joke back and forth. And Ron was one of those guys where, you know, he just was a jolly guy. And bless his heart, he's no longer with us today, but his spirit is. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school, Ron was a senior in college. And we have a thing called the Jesse Owens Open Meet, right?
Right.
And I ran as an open runner against the college guys, and I beat the college guys running in track in 100 meters. So it was one of those things where me and Ron had the same agent. TD would always spend summers with us, and we'd do Jack Lambert's football camp. And so I used to work as a kid. You know, when you get a chance to meet Jack Lambert and Jack Ham and Corson, all the guys from Pittsburgh, I was like a kid in a candy store because, you know, I didn't know my agent was recruiting me at that time, but heck, they were paying me as a high school senior, and I worked there as freshman and sophomore. And so TD finally met me, and we were just talking. You know, TD and I would jaw each other a lot. And I told TD I beat him in the 40.
Ooh.
And he looked at me like, what did you just say? And I said, as a track guy, you know, I'm always confident of my speed. And I can remember Ron looking at TD and going, shaking his head like this. And he looks at Ron and says, what are you shaking your head about? He's like, TD. He's like, TD, he did run a 4.32 at the combine. So, yeah, you should probably not run it. And TD got so mad. I'm not lying. He got so mad that we used to joke back and forth. And so, that was before my rookie season.
Right.
That was when I was a senior at Notre Dame. So after that play and after the game, TD walked over to me and says, GB, he says, I guess you are faster than I thought. PD, you can tell him what happened in the game. The first play of the game, me and PD raced. What, 80 yards, PD?
80 yards, baby. The first play of the game against the Cowboys. Oh, my gosh. And he broke through that line of scrimmage. it seemed like he had like 2,000 yards that game against the Cowboys. But for a 2-14 team, and let me tell you, he lit up the stadium. It was almost similar to that kickoff return this year that the Bills had. Greg had that big 80-yard run, and I'm trying to catch him. I'm a 4'6 guy, and I'm struggling trying to catch him, but I'm right behind him, you know, into the end zone.
That's we raced down, and we never looked back. You know, it took something like that. We really had a struggling team. We had a lot of good guys. We had a lot of older guys who probably, I'm not saying PD was at the end, but some of our line guys, you know, Will was probably at towards the end.
Right.
Ken was coming towards the end. You know, Joe Develin was probably coming towards the end as well. Yeah. We had a really senior line, and it ended up changing in the next year and a half, 2 years. They actually, pretty much all of them were gone within the next 2 to 3 years. So it was just an interesting stable, and you got to remember two things about it. They had the fifth pick of the draft, and then they traded back to 14 and then traded back to 26. So they were picking early in the draft. So that told you they were bad the year before.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we went 2-4, and we had the second. No, we had the first pick, and we picked Bruce Smith, right? And then, then we had the second. Then we were the first pick the next year. and that's how that team was actually built, because of the picks that they were getting. You know, they had traded. They lost Jim Kelly the year before, because Kelly decided to go to the USFL, and when he came back, it made a hell of a difference, and he brought a couple really quality USFL guys with him. Ken Hall came, Metzler came. I mean, they brought some really good talent from the USFL. But we also got, you know, guys like Andre Reed in the fourth round, you know. So it was, you know, people don't give Norm Pollum, Pitts, guys like that.
They don't give those guys the credit that they do. They
give Bill Polian a lot of credit, but a lot of picks were with
Norm Pollum. I'm sorry, I'm getting some calls
to come through. I guess I better block those calls, right?
Nope, you sound good. You sound good. No worries. Rolling, no worries.
But yeah, a lot of, you know, those guys were, they did a great job. And then Bill Polian did a great job afterwards as well. And, you know, I see Andre, you know, Andre's out here in California now where I live. And we see each other probably once a month and joke about something, you know. It's great to see the guys come out this way. And, you know, periodically I'll be back in Buffalo later this summer for the reunion. And, you know, I get back there generally once a year.
I'll be there with
you. It's great to see some of the guys and spend some time joking, bring about the old times, you know, with all the time. Yeah, I mean, all the teams. You know, when you get back to L.A., PD, you got, your era guys out here are just crazy guys, you know. Yeah. So many of these great crazy guys out here.
Oh, you know, yeah. you're living with them
now. We missed so many. Yeah.
Well, you know what? My only year in Buffalo was 84. Of course, you were drafted. And I tell you what, the next year, Andre, I had to give this jersey up. So he took 83 and took it to another level, and he and I are dear friends as well. You know, and that fraternity is really cool. But one thing I wanted to say, what's so special about that 1 year in Buffalo, I ended up having my best individual year in Buffalo on a team that seemed to struggle a little bit, but we had some great highlights and different guys. And of course, Greg led that. But I got a big question. We're going to back up a little bit. How in the heck did Woody let you get away, or Ohio State let you get away and go to Notre Dame? Tell us that story.
Well, I'm going to be honest. It didn't have anything to do with Ohio State whatsoever. Coach Hayes got fired the year I was coming out of college.
Okay.
And Coach Hayes meant the world to me. You know, when I can't call him Woody. We don't call him Woody. He's Coach Hayes to us. You know, he was an imposing figure, but he meant so much to the inner city. You know, he gave so many kids of color opportunities that we never had. And so, you know, we get broken up when we talk about it, because the way he went out wasn't the way a guy of that nature should, you know, and he meant the world to us.
Yeah. Wow. Well, real quick, do you remember number 99 for Ohio State, big tight end? His name was Jimmy Moore. And you remember when Woody slammed that linebacker from Clemson on the sideline? Do you remember that day? I know, Stacey, you remember.
I remember when he grabbed him, punched him.
That's what I'm talking about. So the guy that pulled Woody off of that linebacker from Clemson was Big Jimmy Moore. He was my high school teammate in Tempe, Arizona, and he's no longer alive, my dear friend. But one of the great things about that is he ended up out of our high school. I was in the first graduating class. The following year, Jimmy graduates. He leaves. You know, Frank Cush was ticked off because he couldn't keep him. He goes to Ohio State and just has a wonderful, wonderful career. So he's a good friend of mine. But there's something you and I have in common. You went to a school called South High School.
Yep.
I first went to a school called South Mountain High School in South Phoenix. Now, we were called the Rebels back then, but you guys are the Bulldogs, bro. You never knew that, and I didn't realize that until I started checking out some stuff with you, Bo. What a great storyline and getting away. And going to Notre Dame, that had to just be an experience in itself.
You know, it's a great experience. You know, I was probably the first kid from the inner city to get a scholarship to Notre Dame from Columbus, for sure. Most of the kids that come out of Columbus to go to Notre Dame are typically from the Catholic schools. So, you know, I was hoping that, you know, it opened the door. And for kids coming out of Ohio, a lot of times they were all coming from private schools or parochial schools. But, you know, for me, I wanted to make it one of those kind of first. But, you know, the year we came in, and I say we because one of my dear friends who I lost many years ago, Stacy Turan, Stacy was an all-star for safety for the Los Angeles Raiders. Mm-hmm. But Stacy came from Broad Ripple that same year, which is a major public school in Indianapolis. And he was a basketball player. We knew each other from the hoops. And we both said the same thing. We wanted to make sure Notre Dame saw that, you know, the everyday kid could be an outstanding student at Notre Dame. And both of us graduated in 3 years. A lot of times people don't tend to think, you know, what happened. You know, I graduated from Notre Dame in 3 years, and I did that because I went – I did that because Archie told me there was one thing that I had to get from that school that they owed me. That's the one thing he told me. They owe you a degree. Mm-hmm. So make sure you get that. Yeah. And so every summer I was there getting I took full 15-hour credit hours during the summer. And so I graduated after my junior year, and I started law school at Notre Dame my senior year. And of course, you know, by the time I finished, I went to the Melrose games, ran into Melrose, and then went to my first combine. And after that weekend, I figured out I didn't really need the law degree anymore. I had a really good combine weekend. I took second in the Melrose to Stanley Floyd at like 6:24. So I was like, I guess I don't need the law degree now. I'm going to get drafted in the first round. And that was the first thing, believe it or not, that was the first time anyone had even said to me, you got a chance to be a first round draft pick.
Wow.
You know, that's how funny the draft is. Remember, a lot of people don't know, my senior year at Notre Dame, I didn't really play because my junior year, I did a 360 and tore my ankle up.
Oh, wow.
So I had reconstructive surgery. And so I came back my senior year, and the ankle wasn't really healed. So Buffalo was taking a chance. So I guess that's why they decided to try and fight me on a contract, thinking I didn't deserve all I wanted. But it was one of those situations where, you know, that was the first time. And I'm thank God. Like I said, I always thank God because he's the one that gave me the blessing. He truly did.
That's incredible. I actually remember watching you at college. And I remember when you got hurt, you had, at that point, weren't they going with a dual backfield of you and Alan Pinkett? Like you
Well,
guys?
No, actually, no. When I got hurt, it was just me. Because my sophomore year, I was first-team All-American sophomore, third-team All-American as a sophomore. And then I came back my junior year, and I got off to a bang. I mean, I was off to a great start. And then that third game of the year, Purdue tore the ankle up, and it was over. And I mean, I did a 360 PD and the foot stayed in the ground.
Oh, I know that.
And
I
so
know that one.
Everybody in the stadium saw it and knew what knew I was done. Mm. And the doctors told me I probably would never play again. Wow. So, like I tell people, you know, faith means a lot to me, and the belief that the man above has a calling for you and has he's got a plan for you. And that was the plan. And unfortunately, I thought the plan was just to be a football player, but I found out as the plan meant, you know, he really wanted me to be a mentor, and that's pretty much what I've done my entire life now. You know, I would love to tell you my life has been blessed being a football player, but it's really been blessed being able to help a lot of young men and women go on and see the things that they really want to do in life.
Can't wait to dig into that. I got a few questions on that piece. That's amazing. So looking back at your Notre Dame career, it's wild. And I know that you guys have a lot of mutual friends for obvious reasons, but you seem to be a guy that plays with great tight ends in college. You've got Tony Hunter. Mark Bavaro.
Right.
I mean, this seems to follow you, but as we jump from Notre Dame and into the pros in the interest of time, so you're drafted to Buffalo first round, you have success right out of the bat. The biggest thing is you met my co-host. That changed your life for so many reasons. But there's then you want out of Buffalo. Is that fair enough
no,
to say?
No, what happened is I tore an abdomen. And it was a lower abdomen. I tore a lower abdomen. And people don't want to be honest about things, but, you know, me and the doctors had a we just had a difference of opinion.
Right.
He gave me something that really tore up my stomach. I ended up having a bleeding ulcer. He said he didn't give it to me, but of course I'm taking medication that the team gives me. I'm not taking something that I just go off arbitrarily and get.
Yeah.
Me and Dr. Weiss didn't feel that way. And if you go and look at the guys that Dr. Weiss ruined their careers, like Jerry Butler and Mike Hamby, guys that I can go through a list of them, you know, staph infections every time he went to have a knee surgery. You know, I can go through a whole list. I mean, I'm not very happy with what happened, but since it's over now, I can laugh about it. But we had a difference of opinion. And it just happened to be a difference of opinion right as we were going on strike.
And that
didn't make it even nicer. And I was a pro-union guy. My mother worked in the union, and it supported her and supported my family for years to come. I stood on the picket line very strongly, and I supported the strike because I felt, as I feel today, players deserve guaranteed contracts. Yeah, players deserve to be paid, you know, 55%, not 48% of the profit margin. And there's nothing wrong with guys becoming billionaires, but you don't have to be a slave for them to do that. And I think a lot of times we question why players, like right now, everybody's questioning why Lamar is doing what he's doing. We don't question why Jerry Jones cashes his check.
Yeah,
true.
You know, he gets $1 billion. Nobody talks about the fact that these owners are cashing somewhere close to $3 billion each.
It's incredible.
And they haven't carried a football in their life. And everybody goes, oh, well, you know, well, they're the ones who invested. They didn't invest anything more than I've invested.
Maybe less.
I've invested my life. Tell me that. Yeah. And tell me, until you can tell me their life was invested, I don't know if they've invested as much as I've put into it. And these guys have gone out and they're sweat, you know, I mean, it's been proven. These guys they're putting their lives on the line, and they're really the only ones that are truly being blessed by it are the 32 owners. And not that these guys are not being blessed. I just want to see if an NBA player can get a guaranteed contract, my NFL players deserve contracts. And that's what we were striking for. Unfortunately, we didn't have the backbone to stay and see it through. And then, you know, today, you know, people complain that, well, you know, they get guaranteed money. That's not what they were fighting for. They were always fighting for guaranteed contracts. And just because they get guaranteed money doesn't make it any better. It sounds better on the face of it, but it really is no better, you know, because they were already giving us guaranteed signing bonuses. That's the same thing as guaranteed money.
Right.
We were fighting to get guaranteed contracts, and I would love to say one of these days that these NFL players will have guaranteed contracts.
Damn. Yeah, that is so true, because in 82, when we went on strike, we were fighting for the old guys. You know, there were guys their retirement was nothing. $200, $400 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you think about the legends back in those days, and they deserve every bit of what we could strike and fight for. And, you know, that was a shortened season. I think it was 11 games. And so the battle just keeps going on. Every collective bargaining agreement, and, you know, it's gotten a lot better, but slowly advancing to being a lot better. And so I commend you for being part of that fight. All the guys that go through the league, you know, if you get an opportunity like this and hear that perspective from different players, Greg put it so eloquently. It's one of the things you realize, a concern in the game is wonderful, but it's also troubling. So
it is. And the one thing that I tell all the young players, you know, learn the history of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it's great to know the game, but I can tell you a great story. I was at the Super Bowl probably about five, six years ago. The last time Everson Walls was on. Everson's one of my boys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And this was the first time he had ever been on the ballot. And it shocked me. Because I'm going, this guy led the league two or three times in interceptions, five-time All-Pro. And he's never been up for the ballot. I'm like, well, I've never been up for ballot, but I can understand that. But not Everson.
Yeah.
And we're riding in the elevator, and I get in the elevator, and not to use him as an example, but I am. So I get on there, and I see Deion, and I walk up to Deion, and I go to reach out to say hello to him. And I say, hey, Greg. He says, Greg Bell, you don't have to tell me who you are, man. He said, I'm a student of this game. Mm-hmm. That's how players need to be.
Yeah.
You know, he reached out. He knew me. His first game in the National Football League was against the Los Angeles Rams. I ran for like 226 yards, I think, against the Falcons that day. He knew exactly who I was, you know, and I knew exactly who he was because he took a punt back, you know. But it was like, he's like, I know who you are. You don't have to tell me who you are, man. I know who you are. And I tell guys all the time, all the young kids, because if those are the guys that put you into the position where you are today, but you just don't know it.
Yeah.
You just happen to be playing in a game that seems to be for millionaires now. Mm-hmm. And I remember when it was there for just a couple hundred thousand. And then PD can remember when it was there just for 10,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah, you know, it changes, and the evolution of the game is just so great. And it's because of the players that came before you that's made it so great for you today. And you just got to learn the history of the game. You know, I tell people, I remember walking up to Too Tall or walking up to Elsie Greenwood or whoever it was, and saying, hey, Mr. You know, Greenwood, you know, I didn't call him LC or I didn't call him Jack. Mm-hmm. You know, they until they said to me, like, people walk up to me and say, hey, Mr. Bell. I go, yeah, you know, I'm just Greg. My dad's Mr. Bell. then they get a chance to call me Greg. And I don't mind that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I keep that same kind of respect. You know, it's just like, I remember what they did for the game and how I was so excited to watch them. I wasn't a big autograph seeker, so I never really got into the whole autograph thing, but I just respected what they did for the game that allowed me to walk into the game and be one of the highest paid players at that time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I just like to see it always being passed forward.
Yeah. One of the greatest injustices, and it's a transition to the Rams, and we want to hear about that part, but one of the greatest injustices that Stacy and I talk about all the time is Rosie Grier. There's no reason he should not be in the Hall of Fame. That the NFL ought to just slap itself. That's one they are missing the boat on. And I hope they do that before we lose our dear friend. But, you know, that's
Rosie
what all that
Grier, Rosie and Marshall.
And Marshall,
Two of the greatest that ever played the positions. Mm-hmm. And that don't even make sense. And when you think of some of the guys that go into the Hall of Fame, I be scratching my head going, okay, where did I miss this at?
Yeah.
You know? But like I said, I don't get a vote.
Yeah.
I don't get
it's a vote. Crazy. I love this. There's nothing like chopping it up with veterans about players of the past. For a lot of the fans that listen to this little podcast, a lot of them identify with your generation of players. Mm-hmm. So when we hear things like there's going to be two Thursday night football games now, I'm guessing I know how you two feel. That's insane. That has nothing to do with players. That has to do with advertising dollars and owners. Mm-hmm. Two games within 3 days of each other? Come on.
Ridiculous.
It's insane. Ridiculous.
As I said to you earlier, I think I'm putting my life on the line.
Absolutely.
And he's just putting a dollar.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. I love this great commentary that we need to spend more time on in the near future. But we got to ask the obligatory fan stuff, especially for those Los Angeles Rams fans like myself who watch 42 tear it up. Always come by yourself and London Fletcher. Consistently win the most underrated Ram conversations. Everyone I've ever been in, you two guys. So we got to ask you. You switch over to the Rams. They had a good offensive line. I mean, you had some studs up front in the mid '80s and late '80s, without going through the roster. But you got to play with the Jim Everetts of the world and some of the other great players. And I will forever think that backfield of Bell and Buford McGee should live in history. Absolutely love Buford McGee as well. But as you switch to the Rams and you had those two incredible seasons, you were following guys like Dickerson and Charles White. What was the difference, Greg? How did you recapture after the torn abdomen and other stuff in Buffalo? What made Los Angeles special, the Rams?
Well, first thing that made Los Angeles special was Clarence Shield and Dr. Curley.
Dr. Shield.
You know, when you have a medical team that really knows what they're doing and you have full 100% unequivocal trust in them, you can feel that makes the first difference, first and foremost. And then as a running back, for me, to study with John Robinson. John was a really, really good running back coach. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think when I was younger, if I would have done what I did with the Rams in Buffalo, I probably would have been there my whole career. I think I did a lot of things just off of my young, foolish, stupid self. I didn't have to, you know, I didn't study as much as I should have. I didn't work out as hard. You know, I had a physique. I was this, I was that. If I put the time in like I did with John Robinson, I mean, me and John would come and be at the meeting 6:30 in the morning. And me and him would study the film, just me and him. Nobody else. And unfortunately, we played a lot of one back too. So it was, I was the only person touching the ball. So it really didn't need to be anybody else. But me and John would sit in the film and we would break down the film ourselves. And so that when you got a guy like that, it just makes a difference. You know, I give John that. He was a really, really good running back position coach. And he was a good head coach as well. And so that makes a difference. And then, you know, you've already given the credit where a lot of credit is due. A running back is really as good as his line. We had an outstanding line with Irv, Pankey, Smith, Pankey. Can't believe Jackie Slater. Yeah, you know, I mean, let's be honest. You don't find a better lineman than Jackie Slater in the league. And so, you know, you got guys like that are there for you. And then, you know, I saw Buford about a week ago when I was in Houston. You know, me and Buford still talk probably every other week. So it's one of those things. You know, we were coming out of college together, so we've known each other since, you know, our senior year in college. You know, it's just that kind of a friendship, and we love playing with each other. So when you have that kind of care and love for each other, we had a fun time in Los Angeles, man. And Everett was one of those kind of guys where, regardless what Jim Rome called him or said or did, you know, he had heart. You know, he'd get the ball where it needed to be, and that was a prolific team. I don't care how you look at it. You know, people complain and, you know, that, you know, they lost Eric. Losing the number one running back in the league makes a difference. But it allowed Jim Everett to kind of pull himself, get his bootstraps up. Jim threw for about 4,800 yards. I ran for, you know, my 1,000. Henry Ellert, who should be in the Hall of Fame as well.
Nice. Right.
He shined like no one else. Not even talking about Flipper or Aaron Cox or Ron Brown. we just had a very potent offense at that point in time. And let's be honest, as potent as our offense was, we had a hell of a defense too.
Yeah,
Kevin Green led them from that side of it. We didn't have the, you know, outside of Kevin being that Hall of Fame player, you know, we had a lot of just steady guys, from Johnny Johnson to Gary Jeter, to Mel Owens, to, you know, Jerry Gray. We just had a group of guys who believed in themselves, and we played like it. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, we had a good chance of actually winning one. I wish we would have kept that team together a third year. But unfortunately, John Shaw and Georgia and you know, they thought business was to you know, they just, you know, unfortunately the business of football gets in the way of just good team thinking, and we broke that team up. They didn't want to pay me like they didn't want to pay Eric. They didn't want to pay Gary Jeter anymore. They you know, they let Johnny Johnson retire. Dougie Reed, they let him. I mean, they should have kept that team together. And I'm going to tell you a funny story. 5 years after that, I was retired. I went to a Michigan Notre Dame game. And, you know, Bo and John Robinson were really good friends.
Oh. Okay.
And John looked at me and says, you know, we probably were 1 year away, huh?
Yep.
That's what John said. And I looked at him and said, well, you had the chance.
Yep.
That was your decision. Mm-hmm. You could have kept us one more year. And he really should have fought for that. And, you know, unfortunately we didn't. And you know, we all went on our different ways. And, you know, the thing that I think towards the end of your career, the longevity is to continue getting paid for a couple more years, cash a check, put it away, and retire gracefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it becomes.
That 89 Rams team is one of my all-time favorites. And I was waiting for Preston to jump in. That's the second worst decision John Robinson ever made. Preston, you want to come in on the first worst decision John Robinson ever made?
We know what it is. Well, GB doesn't know this, but I remember when I was negotiating, the reason I got to Buffalo is, you know, because we were fighting back and forth. And, you know, John Robinson was our coach. You know, 83 was his first year. Eric Dickerson was a rookie. That was my last year with the Rams. And then Robinson.
He planned to run the ball.
He planned to run the ball, but he also wanted speed in with the receiver position. Well, you know, I was your average guy. But when it was all said and done, we negotiated the contract. And at the end of it, you know, they shipped me off to Buffalo. But before I left, I said, John, you ever thought that I could come off the bench and be your third and long, your nickel guy, and just keep the drive going? And he thought about that, and he did not comment, and I went on to Buffalo. Had my best year.
So we did him a favor.
But, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, John, towards the end, I think he became more of I hate to say it this way, but I think he became more of a management coach and less of a player's coach.
Yeah.
And that happens to a lot of players. I mean, a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
You know, they get paid. John was the highest paid coach in the league my last year in the league with the Rams. He was making more than most of the players. And it's hard to be a player's coach when your players are sitting there looking at you going, hey, wait a minute, man. I'm the one, you know, like Eric said, I'm running 47 gap.
I'm running that 47 gap.
You know,
yes.
I'm running 47 gap. And so, you know, it gets to that position, man. It gets hard, you know, when guys are at that position. And, you know, I never said that. I mean, I got to the point where I just, you know, he said he was going to do some things. He didn't do them. And I just said, you know, I gotta move on. And I really love my time with the Rams. I spend a lot of time with my Ram guys. I talk to RB, I mean, Ron Brown, probably 2-3 times a week. You know, we still stay in touch. We do some projects together here. You know, Ron was my guy when I was here. We always been close. We met when we were in college because of track and field. And we've always kind of kept that you know, that we boys, you know, we talk all the time. And so, you know, it's just, you know, we had a lot of great guys, you know, Leroy Irvin. We just had some characters, man. And we have a lot of fun. When we see each other now, we still have fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's like nothing ever changed. And we all have to go our separate ways, but we still come back home.
Right. Right.
Love that. Love that. So just two quick ones in conclusion as we try to wrap this thing up, as we always do. Then you move on to the Raiders, and you're hanging out in a running back room that features Marcus Allen, Bo Jackson, and Napoleon McCallum, and Greg Bell. Like, is that an embarrassment of riches at running? Like, what was Al Davis?
It was too much riches for one man. Oof. But that was Al Davis. You know, that was Coach Davis was a – I'll tell you one thing. Of all the owners, I like him better than all of them because he loved the game. His passion for the game of football is unmatched. And he knew more about the game than people will ever give him credit for, because I'm going to tell you what, he watched more film than I ever did. And I know he came in, he'd be at that gym, he'd be at the facility at 5 o'clock in the morning watching film. And he would call me up and say, hey, you know, on that 37 Bob, you know, you should try and dip it a little bit before you, he would tell you what you, and what he gave you advice on sometimes worked. So I'm just telling people have a, you know, they talk about different owners. He was a special owner. You know, he really was. And I understand why so many guys really cared for him. His son is the same way. You know, you can say what you want to say about the Raider organization, but I will say this, of all the organizations that I was associated with, they care more about me today than probably all the other organizations.
Really?
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, they do.
That is fascinating. Yeah. Wow. Well, players, they say once you're silver and black, you're forever locked in. Okay, Greg, real quick for the fans, because this is fan service sometimes. Toughest player you ever faced? Toughest hitter, toughest anything you ever met?
I will say this. The toughest player I ever played with, not necessarily the toughest, but I will say I think he was probably one of the smartest, and that would be Tommy Jackson, linebacker for the Denver Broncos.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Like that.
And Tommy was a hard guy. Because he wasn't a super big guy, he could run with you, he could maneuver with you, but he was smart enough to know the game. You know, Tommy's one of those in-between guys. He could be in the Hall of Fame, he couldn't be. But, you know, Tommy had a 13-year career, one team because he was smart. He was smart.
Yeah.
Wow, super cool. Heck of a guy on TV, too. Yeah. Really smart on television.
Yeah.
Okay, we never have enough time, and shame on us really quick, Greg, but we really are interested in what players are doing today. And as you dig around in your history, you alluded to it earlier about your mentoring people and Athletes for Life Foundation, which you founded in 89. By the way, Stacy Turan, for obvious reasons, I watched his career very closely. The only other guy named Stacy that I knew as a kid in high school trying to say, hey, this is not a girl's name. Stacy Turan was a guy I watched, and I know we lost him in a tragic accident, but you've been inspired by that. What are you doing today? You mentioned some of the projects.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was inspired because I was Nancy Reagan's spokesperson for California, as well as Governor Cuomo's in New York State for Athletes Against Drunk Driving and Drug Prevention. So I was speaking on on drunk driving and anti-drunk driving. And then, of course, I lose one of my best friends to it. We started anti-drunk driving prevention back in 89. And since then, we've become an educational provider. Now, I serve in San Bernardino County. In the city of San Bernardino, I should say, the schools there, we work with over almost 70 schools with after-school education programs, mentoring. I tell people, I think I've probably got the largest life skill camp. We've been doing this camp now 23 years. It started out as a HSPD and JPD program with the NFL. And now we service almost 400 kids for free. Come on the campus of Cal State San Bernardino for 4 days, 3 nights. And they get life skills. They get a goodie bag that's full with shirts, hats, everything. NFL players from the Vikings now, from the Packers. Guys that have come through the program, they give them lifetime lessons on and off the field. We do mental health. We do social justice. We talk about now, of course, the NIL is still in NC2A clearing. And we just do a lot of things. We have a recidivism program with the state now. We have state grants. We have a few of those grants that we're working with the state of California to help some of the kids that are coming out of the system stay out of the system and help them get, you know, gainfully employed in California now. So we do a lot of things with Athletes for Life that I could be on this phone with you for another hour going through all the little things, but The biggest part of it is we're just trying to help these kids achieve their dreams. And if they haven't gotten a dream yet, we try and give them, put them to sleep and let them get a dream, you know?
Love it.
So
that
tomorrow starts out a little bit better than it was today.
So awesome. We do need another hour on that. So we will make you get in your car and join us again, because from this side of the microphone, we live in a world that's crazy at times, as without going into depth, but both of you guys were guys I was fans of, and I know what Preston does and how many hours he gives that nobody knows about. And the same with you, Greg, thanks for doing that back to the kids. Cause we need all the help. We need it. We got to have it for the young people.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
That's my way of giving back that I've enjoyed most. Like I tell people, I've never worked a day in my life. God has been blessing me ever since the day I told my mom. I said, you know, I'm going to be a pro athlete. And that's, you know, man, I think about it. That's been about 44 years ago. So it's been a long blessing, man. And I pinch myself every day, and I thank him every day just for, you know, here we're going into Palm Sunday and all the rest. Mm-hmm. You know, God's been a blessing for me.
Amen,
big week. Well, Preston, I want to give you the honors if you want them. And Greg, we do the 2-minute drill. It's just designed to give the fans listening in an opportunity to learn a little bit about Greg Bell outside of him running people over. So here we go, Preston Denard.
All right. Well, before we get started, GB, I just want to personally say, if you can use me in the efforts and what you're doing with your program, you just give me a call. Let me know how I can support you. All right,
man. I appreciate it.
All right, 2-minute drill. You know what this is? Quick whip, the first thing that comes to mind. And here we go. Turf or grass?
Grass.
Love it. Love it, old school. Raiders or Rams?
Rams.
Ooh, okay. Your favorite movie?
John Q.
John Q. Oh, I love that movie, too. Love it. Okay, so you mentioned Tom Jackson, but your most underrated teammate at any level, actually.
Most underrated teammate. You're going to love this one. Most underrated teammate, Donnie Royal. Because if you came across that middle, Donnie going to knock you out.
Yes. Okay. There you go. You are so right.
And I watched him knock some guys out.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he was a hard hit.
Woo!
It reminds me of a couple of other guys. Okay, your greatest football achievement.
Greatest football achievement. To me, if I'm going to say my greatest football achievement, being drafted number one.
I love it. Yes, sir. You know, and that's a joy, playing with a number one. Well, I guess ED was number one. There's a few of my friends. Somebody was always number one, you know, every year.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, last one. Who plays Mr. Greg Bell in the movie about you and your life?
Oh, who plays Greg Bell? Mm-hmm. Well, if it would have been a couple years ago, of course, I would have picked Denzel. But now I'm going to pick the young – hey, look. But now I'm going to pick the young boy who just finished doing Creed.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Michael
B.
Jordan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a good choice. It's that or Idris Elba, you know. It's like, my God.
That hadn't been called on yet. So that's a good one. Well, this is just wonderful. Stacy and I are so excited. We were really looking forward to this interview. Love you. I'm just glad that I can claim I played with you at least 1 year, and your rookie year, what a great year it was, and to be the ambassador you are with young people in the community in California, Southern California, Los Angeles. I just commend you for the work that you're doing. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys, and I appreciate the invite. Look forward to seeing you in about a month or so.
Yeah, about a month. Yeah, a little bit over a month, a week. But the golf tournament, we're going to swing it a little bit out here. Got some great golf courses out here. Yeah.
All right.
Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay. Fantastic. Go out and support these guys and all that they're doing. Thanks again to the iconic number 42, Greg Bell, Rams fans. What a joy this has been to climb back into the past with one of our top running backs in history. Thanks again, Mr. Bell. And for myself and Preston Denard, Thanks again for listening to Gridiron Icon. Follow us on YouTube, all the major podcast hosts. And until then, be well. We will see you next week.